USDA made some interesting estimates this morning when they released its September crop production report. Came in the soybeans this morning, 2.856 billion bushels. That was a little bit above the trade guess, and a soybean yield 39.6. The corn was the big surprise to traders this morning, however. It came in at 10.639 billion bushels with a yield of 143.2. All right. It seems as though NASI thinks there's quite a bit of corn out there. And early tests have indicated that might indeed be the case. And a lot of reports, no matter where we're hearing them from, are saying, boy, the yields are better than we thought they were going to be in many areas. So it could be that a big crop gets bigger by the time January rolls around. We have to wait and see on that one if that is the case or not. But it's interesting, I think, how the market reacted today. We came off about an 8 cent drop in the corn, and it rallied by the close, came down about 4.5 cents. And the beans, too. Beans took it on the chin, about double-digit drop this morning, and then found some support at some technical levels, rallied themselves as well, came off of those numbers as well, which indicates some interesting things that our analysts will get into here in just a few minutes. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and get opening statements from our analysts. To my immediate right is Sue Martin. She's with Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa, and came over on the plane. I wish I had a plane to travel around this two-state region. That'd be cool. But came over on the plane. Sue Martin's comments can be heard on our radio station, as you all are aware, at about 12:55-ish each and every workday. Of course, if you've got the internet and you're on there, the savvy ones know it's often up there before it's even broadcast. So check it out. Sue Martin, an opening comment.
I only have one thing to say. I promised tonight to let the other two guys talk.
I don't know if the other two guys know what to say about that.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was going, yeah.
Kirk Himmel wants to talk tonight, evidently. Well, okay, Sue, you got a lot of notes, but you want to get to them in a bit then? That's what you're saying to me?
Well, I will say I was really surprised to see the corn number today. I think that was a bigger surprise than the bean number, because I think that everybody felt that the rains in August, in the middle of August, really added some bushels in, and then, of course, rains off of Hurricane Katrina that hit into the southern part of Illinois and on into Ohio may have also added some bushels. However, I don't agree with their number. I think that the heat that we've been experiencing in our area, we've been with about 3 weeks without rain. Up until last week, we managed to maybe get a half inch to an inch in various parts of Iowa. And along with that, we've been having heat. And, of course, in the last week, we've had a lot of 90-degree temps with 30-mile-an-hour winds. And that has to be cutting some yield there. That has to be stalling us out. And we kind of think that the yields aren't going to be as good as what the USDA thinks so on beans. But beans are harder to tell. There's a lot of pods out there, but I don't think the beans will be as big in those pods as what would have been hoped for had we have had some nice rains.
Thank you, Sue. Next to Sue Martin is Chuck Shelby. And Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities, and a name you're familiar with, Mike Zuzolo, also with Risk Management Commodities. And Mike, of course, on every Friday morning on AM 580 at 9:50, and then again at 2:06 in the afternoon. Chuck, a farmer, more than 5,000 acres over there in Shelby Township. Over there, right?
Tippecanoe County.
Tippecanoe County.
Home of the Purdue Boilermakers.
We won't mention that part.
We sent you Bruce Weber. I keep trying to get a little credit for that.
And he did. He
did
actually
well.
Stocks Bruce well. Weber's freezer with beef. And because he's friends, he was able to wrestle a basketball for me for last season, autograph. Thank you much, Chuck.
It was harder the second year than the first year, Dave, I'll say that.
Well, I understand.
his stock went up pretty good.
Yeah. An opening comment, Chuck.
It's always a pleasure to be here. we see these meetings in Illinois, we have nice crowds, and we don't really have that yet, although Dave's made a couple inroads. We do have a couple meetings like this in Indiana, but you're very fortunate over here to have the opportunity to have folks like us get up here and give you some opinions. But I think what we're going to have to do with this report is deal with the hand we're dealt with. The USGA, right or wrong, is what they're going to say. It does create some opportunities. We can see the LDP has really exploded here in the Eastern Corn Belt. We have a branch office in Nebraska, and he was complaining that their cash price is in the 150 range, and their LDP is basically the same as ours. So I think it's going to take a lot of work, but I think if we are used good marketing tools and good ideas, we can make some progress as far as having a pretty good revenue or situation out of what's going on with this report, take advantage of the LDPs, and go from there.
Thank you much, Chuck. And then down there on the end is Kurt Kimmel. And Kurt is with Grainfield Marketing. He, of course, in Normal, Illinois, and Kurt on the air every Monday at 9:50 in the morning and 2:06 in the afternoon. And as he likes to say, he gets to go first in the week, and then everybody gets to take pot shots at him all week. Kurt, an opening comment.
Oh, thank you, Dave. It's enjoyable to be here in front of the WILL stronghold. I don't know what we can say because you're all loyal listeners, and you've probably heard it all. But just to touch up on the report, it's kind of interesting what happened. When it's all boiled down, I think Illinois is probably going to be better than anticipated. A lot of the yields we're hearing is 140, 160 bushels on corn. Some of this root-worm corn, 190, 192. But yet we've got some bad spots, too, in the northeastern part, northwestern part. You know, we're talking 50, 60 bushels. So when said and done, Illinois is probably a little better. Then on the other side of the equation, I'd probably say Iowa's probably been a little overrated and probably less there. So where we all come into this winter, we'll find out. Probably the main concern of all, everybody's looking forward. They're all looking the back door and trying to project how big or how small the crop was. And I think what got past us was the size of the 2004 crop. If you take 2004 carry out in this new crop production, we've currently got about 12 billion bushels of corn to find a home for. Same thing on the beans. You take the 295 million bushel carry out and 2.8 billion bushel, we've got over 3 billion bushels to find a home for. So I think we sort of lost perspective of that here in the short term, and that's what we're dealing with. But as time goes on, I think the market will find a home in here. The end users aren't really priced up in here, and as we move lower here, that's the function of the market, is to find true value of corn and beans, and I think it's going to take some time. But looking forward to answering some of your questions.
Thank you very much, Kurt. And I have a few questions to get us started, and then we will want to go out in the audience and get your thoughts as well. Let's start with this question. Let's talk about corn a little bit. And what's on everybody's mind right now is LDP. Today, Champaign County LDP was 40 cents, I believe. It was 43 cents on Friday. Corn driving down nicely, a lot of good heat. Last week into the weekend, and heat today too. Sue Martin, if you can cut corn in the next week or so in Illinois, what are we looking at LDPs? And what would you recommend regarding LDPs?
I would recommend taking the LDPs. I could see where the price of corn can drift a little bit more lower to the downside. 205 is pretty good support. But this market may be able to attack the $1.93 area before it's all said and done. However, once we get this river really flowing better and get the Gulf back open on deck, that will probably change basis levels a little bit. And I would think then that maybe your LDPs start to lift a little. So I would take the LDPs as you can take them, and I wouldn't try to hold out for more. I would be very aggressive at taking that.
Chuck Shelby, we talked a little bit about LDPs last week at an Agricultural Outlook meeting. They were more than 35 cents at that point, and you said giddy up at 35 cents. I imagine you're still in that giddy up mode.
Yes, we'd be a little bit cautious. So if we're going to take it, one of our strategies is to go out there and buy a March 210 or 220 put if you haven't sold the corn, because with this number being the biggest change it is, the carryover now is exactly or real close to last year's 2-plus billion bushel. So we like taking the LDP in the 40-cent range, Dave, but reinvesting maybe 7 to 10 cents of that and purchasing a put option out there in the March contract if you have not forward sold that corn.
Kurt, LDPs, we're hearing people say a statistical anomaly, essentially, and it really doesn't have a lot to say about where we are with the futures, or it has more to say about the transportation. And as time goes by day, those barges are getting more and more back online. How much longer, Kurt, will these LDPs hang in the 30 to 40 cent range, and what would you do with them?
Well, as far as the big LDP opportunities, I think the days are numbered. I think it's more the function of moving loan corn than anything. The government's not going to take delivery of corn. They're not in that business, so they're going to make producers an offer they can't refuse, and I think that's part of it. Then the second part is the Gulf. So once the loan corn is cleaned up and we get the Gulf a little bit more free-flowing here, I think you're going to see the LDPs erode rapidly. Gulf basis has improved dramatically. We're back to where we were pre-hurricane levels, so I think you got to watch it real quick. As far as potential, if you just do the math on it, say if LDP is 50 cents, you got a 10 billion bushel corn crop, do the math on that. I don't think the government's going to be willing to write billions of dollars of checks. So I'd say this 40 to 50 cents is what we're going to do. As far as being in Illinois, we're really blessed because if you take 40 cent LDP and $1.80 cash bid, it gives you 220. If you take your 40 cent LDP and subtract it from loan for math purposes, you take $2, subtract 40 cents, that gives you $1.60 on the downside, so you can hold it till then. So I agree. I think you take the LDPs in here. I do like the idea of reinvesting 7 to 10 cents, like Chuck said, maybe buy a put to put a floor in you, and I go with the deferred contracts to capture the carry because it is a carry and charge market. So there are several things you can do, but each one of you is a little bit different. Each one of you has got different risk tolerance levels, so I think there's tremendous marketing opportunities here, even though we are at lower levels.
Sue, Kurt mentioned it's a carrying charge market, and indeed it is right now. The question is, will it be by January and February or not, and what do you think?
I think it will. There's a lot of talk out there about, because of the high energy costs, that we're going to see more bean acres planted next year, and therefore corn, as you go towards that February to March time frame, when we start to think about what we're going to do for the new crop season, how many acres we're going to put in, that the price of corn is going to rally to attract acres. I'm not in that camp. I think corn is still a follower. A lot of traders are bearish beans, bullish corn, or friendly corn towards the new year, and I totally disagree with them. I think corn will still remain a follower. I know that we've got good ethanol prospects coming online. I know in Iowa we've got a lot of plants that will be coming online by the 1st of May, but I think that come here, it's going to be an early fall, and it's going to be interesting to see how many farmers are willing to put on anhydrous this fall. It's going to be awful hard for those farmers to bypass, even though it's expensive, putting on anhydrous. And of course, if we see a lot of farmers that haven't done it compared to normal, think what your anhydrous prices are going to look like next spring. They won't fall back much. I think that the farmer's going to be pretty consistent. I don't think he'll change an awful lot when push comes to shove. I know throughout Iowa there's been a lot of farmers very disgruntled with the bean yields, and if you get corn actually producing better than what anybody expected, and I don't think the bean yields are going to be better than most people expect, all of a sudden that's going to start to bring you back around to that same psychology that started last year, and I think we'll see corn acres next year. And so I think it's going to be a bean market that leads us out of here eventually.
Oh, I want to stay with you on that bean market. So these beans are going to be smaller than you think eventually, and you think that yield that came out today will actually erode by January. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I do. I'm friendly beans, again, and I think we're going to take another swipe at $8 beans this next year. This last year, it was this past season, it was the new crop beans that got the closest to the $8 price, and to be honest with you, $8 is pretty tough for a new crop ticket. I mean, we've been over it in past years, but we don't stay over it very long. And usually getting close to $8 beans is a pretty good price, especially if you're with a lot of time to go in your growing season. My eyes, it has to be the May and July contracts that need to swing at the $8 price, and I think we will do that this coming year. The one thing back on corn is that when you look at the price of corn, and there's a, the back-end months, the December contract of next year is kind of getting loaded up with some longs. And it's because of that psychology or mentality of what's going to happen. I think that, yes, we can probably swing corn back around the 260 area again this next year. Of course, when you've got December of 06 corn at 249, that isn't very far away. But in my eyes, it's the beans that are really going to be rising and shining, because if you look at your mineral, your crude mineral oils, we're using 82.8 billion barrels, not billion, million barrels a day. And with these high prices that we've got, there are 17 veg oil that we consume, and every day we consume about, I want to say maybe 2.5 million barrels a day of those. Our stocks to usage ratio on the veg oils is at about 10.8% or something like that, but 10.3%. It's very tight. But because of the fact that the mineral oils has exceeded in value, all of the 17 veg oils in value for the first time in history, I think it's going to start to show us a shift. And we're going to see some demand increasing for the veg oils, which of which the palm and soybean oil will be your two biggest ones. And therefore, I think that puts a little bit of demand under the beans for just the veg oil side alone. China has got a crop that they're very concerned about. There's a lot of talk about white stem mold rot, and that can take a toll on their crop. And, of course, they've had their share of problems this year anyway. China, even on this report, the USDA has them targeted for importing up to 27 million metric tons of beans this next year. And they've already, just from January through August, imported 41.2% more beans than they did a year ago. And keep in mind, a year ago, what were you hearing? China isn't going to be the buyer that they were the past year. And they found out they were wrong. Well, China's going to be a big importer next year. They're not only going to import beans, they'll also import wheat and corn. But the other thing we're looking at is all the problems that are going on in South America financially. And they have a lot of issues to deal with. And with the dollar, I will say the dollar being up today probably was helpful to them. But with the price of beans dropping like they are, and they're not being able to stoke those guys into planting more beans, I think you're going to see the USDA dropped 2 million metric tons on their estimate for Brazil. They're at 60. And, you know, the world is, last year was prepared for 66 million metric tons starting out, even though the weather took its toll. So any issues that arises this next growing season for Brazil, and they don't have a lot to sell, maybe 5-10% at the max, any issues that arise is going to really ignite that bean market. I think the beans are going to go over 8 this next year, and I think they will carry the corn back up.
Okay, Sue likes $8 beans, and she says there's a bull story in there somewhere. And maybe it's because of South American crop adversity. Maybe it's a low U.S. yields that come off the combines. Maybe it's a slowing or a more rapid pace of U.S. new crop soybean export sales to attract more spec buying, something like that to spark a rally. Chuck, what do you think about this soybean market?
I got to go back to corn. I don't know. I'm from Indiana, but I don't think my toolbar is going to ground right now, Sue. It's about like this floor as dry as it is. So I guess that on that point, from the guys we talk to and from my own farm, I mean, with the price of anhydrous, you know, you're going to have to pay for that stuff. Fuel you're going to have to pay for. Let's look at planting beans. Guys, you can get credit from a seed company. You got no cost in getting that seed. Roundup's dirt cheap. So if you're kind of cash flow poor, you know, and you had more corn acres this year in Illinois, I think it's an easy shift. I hope we have $8 beans. I'm just saying from the farmer standpoint, I certainly think that, again, corn acres at those price levels, it's going to take a lot more, about $400 an acre, our guys say, to get us up there to start making money. So I think it's on the minds of farmers, and I think it's going to reduce corn acres. The beans, you know, is a positive from the report today to see them reduce world carryovers. Certainly the beans have a lot of issues with the diseases. I mean, the rest factor's been forgotten. We didn't really have a problem. You know, that could come into play next year. So I think, again, there's going to be some shift in bidding on acres next spring.
Kurt.
Yeah.
Soybeans.
Well,
there's an advantage to being third.
Yeah, I agree. I'll take the correct answer, and it depends on weather. I mean, it doesn't matter what acres you have or what demand you have. As long as you've got favorable weather, you have a big crop, that's going to determine price. But everybody's talking about South America acres and their financial situation. Well, if you're bullish South American beans or concerned about putting beans in the ground in South America, you got to be $4 bull corn here in the U.S. because if that happens down there, we're going to have major planting problems here in the U.S. And what I mean by that is farmers are farmers. They're going to plant. If you don't plant your ground, somebody else is going to plant for you. So I don't think there's going to be expansion in South America. I think they're probably going to have the same amount of acres. Is it going to depend on weather? We're talking, what, two low crops in a year? Yes, they were projected to have 65 million metric tons. It came in 51, 52. This year they're expecting maybe 60 million metric tons if it's favorable. So it's going to depend on weather. And here in the U.S., the guys I talk to in the southern part of Illinois are probably going to go a little heavier wheat and come back with double crop beans. And a lot of it's going to probably depend on the banker, talking to some of these financial guys in these loans as they sit down and sort of map out what they're going to do. They're going to have to play give and take. Yes, nitrogen is going to be high, but you're going to have to give up something else. But two, a lot of guys have already booked anhydrous for 415, 430 already, trying to get ahead of the game. They've been spooked into doing that. So guys are already looking at input cost ahead of time. I expect we're probably going to lose a few million corn acres and probably go to a few more wheat and bean acres. But when it's all said and done, it's just going to hinge on the weather. And as tight as the world supply-demand balance sheet on corn, 111 million metric tons, that can ignite the corn market. But yet, too, another crop shortage and South American weather problems here could very easily send beans not to $8, but, you know, $9, $10 real quick with just a 200 million bushel carryout this year.
Chuck, I was surprised to learn that here in Illinois, elevators are going to be putting corn on the ground. And they're going to be putting corn on the ground because there's plenty of old crop corn still in the elevators that are either in the possession of the elevators or possession of the producers. And so the Andersons, who have a 12 million bushel elevator, they say they're going to put corn on the ground, and within 2 weeks they expect to do that. What is the implications in your mind to pricing if a lot of corn ends up getting on the ground in Illinois and Indiana?
Well, I think Kurt made the point in the beginning there. A lot of this has to do with the old crop corn. There's elevators in Indiana that are pretty full, and it goes right back around in a circle every day. We got 2+ billion somewhere, give or take, left over. So that, to me, you know, leads to a wide basis, and I think that's one of the places we can come back and make a little money on this market. If you've got storage space, we expected the basis to come back around and help you out. So it's going to widen the basis for a while, but again, basis will come back around. I think the problem is if you have to go to an elevator and store corn, that's a really tough situation. If you have your own bin, I think you're in a much better position.
Sue, almost every analyst I talk to is in agreement that you need to store your corn for the carry, and then you look at the beans and try to decide what to do with them. Last 2 years, it paid if you held on to the beans. Because of the problems down with South America. What do you do this year? And if you don't have enough storage to store beans, if that is what you would prefer to see done, would you want to re-own them? And how would you want to re-own them?
Well, first off, if you don't have storage to store the beans or you're filling that storage with corn, which I expect a lot of farmers will opt to sell beans and keep corn, then I would definitely retain ownership back. If you are not comfortable with the futures, then I would, you know, go to option strategies. I would certainly be looking at buying some calls, and I would move out to the July contract, or start with May and you roll them into the July if you have to. If South America comes off with a pretty good crop, and remember, the world is short bought, and they have been ever since February. They were so bought in, even a lot of world consultants were so bearish that the end user or the world buyer did not book ahead. They listened to all that bearish talk. And when it got away from them, they went hand to mouth for the rest of the year. And they're still hand to mouth. And of course now, with all that's gone on, if you're a world buyer, you might have been a little concerned knowing you were short bought and expecting to coming into harvest that you were going to be able to grab a hold of stuff quite easily and get it cheap. And all of a sudden to have a port that could have been closed for a long period of time and still isn't really flowing totally that smooth yet. Because of that, I think that the world buyer is going to be very willing to come to us. He has nowhere else he can go to get beans, so to speak, until you get into the latter part of January, first early part of February at the earliest. You know, farmers are very slow in getting their money put together in Brazil and getting their inputs, and usually they start by the latter part of September starting looking at planting in some of those areas. So I think that I would be opting to retain ownership on beans one way or another. I wouldn't let those beans get away. And the corn, you know, I struggle with corn because everywhere I go, I hear people saying we're going to store the corn and wait for the basis to improve, which most years works out pretty good. But in Iowa, we've got a ton of corn around. I mean a ton of corn. Iowa was the worst state for holding on to corn under loan and not selling it. And yet, we could look in our own backyard and crops were lush and green. So, you know, now we've got like two harvests together. Elevators are full. They're charging 15, 16 cents up front to bring that corn in. And if you don't get a chance to get it harvested very fast because the beans are coming on so fast that they're going to be doing beans first, then they'll move right into corn. Well, you know, they're going to be looking at an LDP possibility of slipping away from them. And then the next thing is, what if, because all that corn that's sitting in the elevator and the farmer or the elevator knows and everyone else knows, farmers have got to have money. Now, they'll use the LDPs for short-term cash. But as you get towards the winter months and towards the 1st of March, they know you're going to have to sell corn or do something. And so what are they going to do? They're going to ruin that basis on you again. And so I'm wondering just how good the basis really is going to get, especially in Iowa, I wonder. But out here, you guys are a little bit more blessed than we are with better basis than we have, sometimes better LDPs than we get. But I don't trust this corn market too well. I think it'll be okay. I just don't know how good is it. You know, so the market rallies. If you have a wide basis, you know, your basis might improve 15, 20 cents, and that might be all you get. So I guess I would be, if you sell beans, fine, but I would probably look to find a way of protecting myself. If you hang on to corn, I agree with the other guys, I'd have some puts underneath it or something for price protection, just in case things don't go as you plan.
Chuck heard this scenario today. It's been kind of wet in the western corn belt. And the northern upper Midwest corn belt, and because of that, when harvest comes, that it always comes from south to north, but even more so maybe this year because it's been drying so well right now that folks might get out tomorrow morning and start cutting corn. But up further north, the upper Midwest, because it's been a little wetter, we might not see where the top yields in the whole nation are emerging until after the market has begun to absorb these lower yield returns in the central Midwest. What does that imply, though, for price?
The guy I work with in South Dakota, I mean, it's one thing, it seems like, Dave, that they're more advanced than normal, too, as far as when they're going to get out into the field. I think the report today, though, was kind of the nail in the coffin as far as what the market thinks. With that 4-bushel yield increase, which is pretty significant in the USDA statistics there, I think we're going to expect to hear those bigger yields coming from somewhere, whether it be in Iowa or Dakotas or Minnesota, wherever it comes from. So I think that is being factored in here. We look at the SEP futures as kind of the leader. When a SEP goes off the board, if it's 190 or wherever it may be, we look for the December futures to sink down to there for their contract low. And that's kind of the low in the market. So I think it's been factored in, basically, with today's report.
And Kurt will give you the technical question. Look at these markets from a technical standpoint and tell us what traders are thinking for both downside and upside objectives.
Well, first of all, as a technical trader, from the fund's point of view, the trend's down. Your turn's your friend, so they're going to push the downside. That's evident in the corn with the large short position in the corn market. Beans, why the fund positions long as beans, I don't know, because the trend is down. The moving averages, longer-term moving averages are all down. But I think there's several points you got to watch here real close. If you look to the daily chart in December corn, there's a head and shoulders chop top. If you measure the downside objective, it points to 202. If you use the 240 swing point and you had a high of 275, that's 35 cents, you swing that down, that says 205. So a lot of stuff we're looking at suggests this 205, 202 level basis to Ds. I think we got to watch the SEP. SEP goes off Wednesday, I believe. See where it goes off. The fear is that we'll have the roll-down effect. Once SEP goes off, Ds rolls down. Once Ds goes off, March rolls down. That's typical of a carry market, but I think we could probably meet somewhere in the middle. Longer term here, we've missed the nick on the cycles. The next cycle low is due towards the end of the month here, so we'll see if that catches or not. As far as the beans, if you look at the bean chart, if you go back to February, we consolidated near this 575 low, and we broke out above it, and that's when the bull rally started. Today's low was 575 in November. We're back to the point of breakout, so it'll be interesting to see if we can sort of hold that point or not. I passed out some long-term charts with the long-term fundamentals, supply-demand balance sheet. The bottom line is, if you look at the long-term chart, towards $2 futures and these 550 beans, we're back towards the lower end of the range. From an outsider's point of view, you really don't want to get too bearish down here. You want to buy low and sell high. I know that's easier said than done. So from a long-term perspective, I think we're getting down to some areas where you start tracking outside investment money. You know, we talked about the hedge funds, the Jim Rogers and all these guys wanting to buy and hold. Well, I think we're close to those levels.
I'm going to stay with you for a second, Kurt, because you mentioned the funds. And the question I have for you is, today, before trade began, the funds were some 13,000 long in the soybeans. Are they going to build in a net short position here in the next few weeks?
Well, you would think common wisdom is the market trends lower, you should be short from the funds point. And I'm talking about the trading funds. There's two types of funds. The funds I talk about are the ones that follow the moving averages, are in and out both long and short. Now there's the longer term, they call it the hedge funds or the index funds, that's the buy and hold. But they've, the way I understand it, been going through the commercial accounts, and they've not been counted as a commodity fund. They've been classified as a commercial. The other panelists have an opinion on why the beans fund position is still long, but in reality, they should be following a trend. If I'm a fund manager and you're going to invest $50,000 to $100,000 with me, I've got to have some type of plan. That plan is usually technical. When the red line crosses the green, you sell. When the green crosses the red, you buy. It's fairly simple. Now, there's some other funds out there that do other things, but that's what most of them trade by with the ones I visit with.
Chuck, are the funds going to go net short in beans?
I don't think so. I think Sue had some valid points there. I think the beans are where they like to invest their money. They certainly have more swing there. So I don't think so. I think they might help us out in corn when they decide to liquidate their big short position there. But I think they're going to stick with the beans.
And Sue, I'm going to give you the wheat analysis question. Because I know you want to talk about wheat tonight.
Oh, God, yes.
So I'm going to just leave it open because I don't want to force your hand in any particular direction. Just go ahead.
Well, I think with the wheat market, that's the one market that has been through its harvest, and it's on a seasonal basis of trying to put in some lows. You're catching some spreading between corn and wheat, whereby they're selling the corn and buying wheat. However, if you don't have a low here in corn, I don't see wheat rallying very far. So I think unless wheat, December Chicago wheat, can get over 342, I don't see the wheat market doing much for us. I think it all goes back, if you look at wheat, I think you've got to go back and look at corn, because while the hard red winter wheat has been drawing the export business mostly, the wheat market's been pretty laid back, and it's just been a follower. There's one thing I do want to jump back to corn on, and it's just a fundamental thing is that, or a historical thing is that in the last 30 years, you have had 14 times that you've had the USDA in the month of September come out with a large increase or a fairly decent increase in production over what they showed in the month of August. Out of those 14 times, eight of those years, you went on and seen production increase again into the final in January. Out of those 8 years, seven of them saw an increase in production in the month of October. So if the USDA increases production again in October, which would seem really hard to believe that they do because they really popped it up pretty good today, then that would be a pretty good sign to you that they're probably going to come off with some pretty decent numbers in January. I think that in Iowa, that our surprise will be that maybe the yields don't go up a whole lot more, that we've got Iowa pretty well popped up already, where Illinois is maybe coming off as a little bit of a surprise. I think the real thing's going to be everybody's going to be interested in watching bean yields, and the early yields that we're hearing out our way is around 50 bushels to the acre. I want to tell you, while some think that's good, in our area that is not good. We are normally 60 to 64, that type of thing. You hear a lot of it. And so far, while we're very early getting into the field, flying over, we didn't see a lot of combines out yet, which really surprised me because I'm hearing farmers talk about 13% moisture and that type of thing in the beans, and these beans are coming fast. I think by the time we get into the middle of the week or latter part of the week, we'll be hearing quite a few yields. And I will be surprised if we don't start getting some 60 bushel bean plus. That's going to be a disappointment, and that tells me something.
All right, we've reached the point where we're going to take some questions from our audience, and I'm going to give the Farm Bureau a heart attack right now because I'm going to say the first question gets that vehicle out in the hallway. So, who has a question? Who has a question? I know we have a lot of savvy guys and gals here tonight. Who has a question? All right. Energy. Last week, energy prices were getting close to $70, touching on 70. They backed off a little bit. Everybody's concerned about the energy market. Everybody wants to know what to do about high anhydrous, high potash, high DEP. What are we going to do? How are we going to protect ourselves? Is there any play that we can make that might help us a little bit? We're seeing these bids for anhydrous. $500. I heard a $500 bid the other day. So these are the smartest people on the planet right here. They're going to tell you what you can do with these high energy prices. If there's something to do, they'll know it. Kurt.
You want to talk?
I'll wait.
I'll talk, you guys think.
I got my answer, so.
Well, first of all, I would ask for a tax refund because basically when they filled up the strategic reserve, they put crude oil in that reserve at $30, $40 a barrel. Got to 70, they're talking about releasing it. So I think there's a $30, $40 barrel gain, and I think that's at taxpayersinvestment.com back to us. So I'd write our congressman about that, step one. Step two, I would watch crude oil futures October at the 63.75 area. That's sort of a key support area. If it could hold there, we can probably see some type of rebound. Failure to hold 63.75, I think we can slip one down to $58 on the downside. We've taken a lot out of it. Crude oil supplies are going to be somewhat plentiful here. The problem is refinery capacity and the ability to get gasoline. Gasoline's still going to be a hot ticket here for a while. The other part would be as heating oils would go into this winter. If you're interested in some trading ideas, David Hightower wrote a special report here. I brought a few copies, the explosion in the green fuels, and this talks about ethanol and bio. There's some plays in here, and it's got some statistics on ethanol and bio production. And if you want to take one of these homes, feel free to. Probably your best bet to get to your questionnaire, and I'll let Chuck and Sue answer it, is I'm hearing guys booking anhydrous for 4.15, 4.30, and trying to beat the rush to 500. I think 500 might be a scare tactic.
Chuck, you're a farmer. You're concerned about such things. What are you finding out?
I love Sue's idea. We plant beans, we don't put on any fertilizer, we don't burn much fuel, and if she's halfway right, we're still going to make good money. So I really am serious that I think that, you know, you can reduce your input costs. It's going to be difficult for the anhydrous to get the production up down there. I mean, in that area of the world, energy is the first thing they want to get fixed. The barge system, second probably. And all the fertilizer industry down there is probably the third thing that's going to happen, because we're not that big a part of that world down there. So I really like planting beans, the cost to produce them. You probably got leftover fertilizer from your corn ground you didn't use because the yields aren't that great. And I'm wholeheartedly behind Sue's idea. I mean, I don't know if they can get to 8 or where they're going, but even if 6 would be great, or 7 would, you know, be a good moneymaker.
Go ahead, Sue.
I think crude may have put a high in. We got up to 71, or not 71, just under 71 cents. And we have these counts that we do. Occasionally I'll talk about them on the radio, like wave 1, wave 2, wave 3. And on crude, for the October crude, wave 2 in a major, major scale was 71.68. So we got pretty close. And so I would call that probably close enough in a window. Other countries started ramping up their production. Why wouldn't they? The price is sky high. So even though they thought that that was going to be kind of coming off as like they were doing us a favor. And so you're getting more production elsewhere. On top of it, anybody who wanted to be long when that hurricane hit was already there. And that's why the market peaked on the day of the hurricane and then fell back. If you took the range of what crude used to be from $10 to, what was it, 38 or whatever, and you roll that over, you pretty well have also gotten up into that window as well. So, and the other thing I find is we have some clients that are commercial accounts. One's a lumber mill, and he tells us that he called his supplier for natural gas to book his natural gas, and his supplier told him, he said, we don't have very many people booking ahead this year. And I think that's interesting because it shows that your users are going hand to mouth also. And so I think that they're just going to try to keep weathering the storm here. And I know there's been talk of a possibility of $100 crude, which, by the way, a third count or wave 3 is 103. So, but I think we've hit a spot here where the crude is going to snag. And I'm wondering if we haven't maybe put our top in on probably the most bullish news that you could have heard.
I need you to talk about these waves, because you talk about them on the radio. Now I have it detailed, but just so folks know where you're coming from when you do this wave talk.
Okay. When I talk about wave 1, 2, and 3, they are not Elliott wave. What they are, it's a mathematical equation that I use. And it works off of, it kind of goes on the Fourier method of, for every action, there's a reaction. And so it's a price projection method, and it kind of goes on the rule of thumb. On wave threes, a lot of times we'll stop a market. It used to be we didn't get wave threes very often, but in the last few years, we've been getting them pretty consistently. This year, on the upside, a major wave 2 for soybeans was 8.23. And they couldn't quite make it. And in a year like this, you would have thought we would have got that. But it was working off of a new crop bean, and I think that's why we didn't quite get there. On the downside in beans, a wave 2 was 578 to 583, depending on from where I started. And I thought it was rather interesting because we did get into that area, and we're into that window. Should we go for a wave 3 on the downside in beans, that is 513. And if you look at the gap at 640 on the charts, that is could be called a halfway gap. That would project you to 510. Do I think we're going to get there? No, I don't. But, you know, November beans, last year's high was 799.5, and I think the low was around 519 or something like that. And we have yet to take out last year's high, so who knows. But I don't think we'll get down that low. I think we may have seen, at least if nothing else, an interim low here today.
One of the questions that I get asked the most is, how soon do I begin our marketing for 2006? And what should I do for 2006? And they got 2004 still in when they're asking you this question. But I am interested in 2006 and what kind of things you are beginning to look at. I'm not saying you do something tonight, but what kind of things are you beginning to look at in terms of marketing for that 2006 year, Kurt?
Yeah, I get that a lot. You talk 2006, they go, well, I still got 2003, 4, and 5, so what are you talking about? So, most generally, you can look at a chart in the December, that's probably the most consistent, and see some pretty good resistance at 250, 260 area. So when we sit down with producers and map out a marketing plan, we like to sort of kick in this 250 area. We encourage scale-up selling. Because when you get an uptrending market, it's easier to sort of scale into as you go instead of waiting for the top. Because when the tops are in, they're in. It's straight down. I truly believe we're in a 70s type of market, straight up, straight down. And so we're sticking to the scale-up selling approach. And our strategy right now is back in this 255, 260 area, do 10, 15%, sort of scale up. Maybe reach for that 270 area, get a chunk of it. You can do a forward contract, or you can do a hedge to arrive, and just sell the board. What you can do is you can sell the board and buy a call. You can go out and buy some puts. Those DEES 230, 240 puts are fairly reasonably priced compared to a year ago. There's several things you do, but I think the process between now and end of the year to get started on it, because it always pays to look forward here and get going on. As far as beans, I'd be a little patient through here yet, see if we experience some South American problems and so forth, but I wouldn't be opposed. Same type of strategy in the beans. Go ahead and start a scale-up process. What I like in the beans is maybe moving the old crop and replacing it on paper. As Sue mentioned, maybe go out to the July. Use that as a cash replacement strategy. Also use that as a sort of a courage position to sell some new crop later on next growing season when we get some weather concerns.
So, Kurt, you like die moves in the corn? Is that what you're saying? 250, 260, 270, 280.
And leave them there. Don't do it. Change if close or canceled if close.
But wait a minute. That's not right.
Yeah, that often happens. You start getting bullish, and man, I don't know if I'm going to have enough bushels to meet that. I like putting the orders in there and just leaving them. You can always replace them with some other types of positions, but no, we like writing it down on paper, following through with it, sticking with it, because you go back in history, you always look back. Right now, let me ask you a question. How many of you need to sell some more grain? If you don't have your hand up, you're lying. So even myself and our advice, we didn't get quite enough on. In some areas where they only had some smaller yields, we probably sold too much. But from a producer's point of view, you need to have a plan, scale up, sell. And you got to determine, are you a producer or are you a trader? It's two different scenarios. And we've been through that. We start marketing and hedging, all of a sudden we're wanting to trade it. And there's tremendous opportunities on both sides of it, because I think there's a ton of movement. That's why the funds are getting into this market. Commodities in general, over $140 billion just on the fund side. That's not counting the hedge funds on the commercial side of it. They see opportunity. They see price movement. So, you actually need two types of accounts. It's hard to do, but, you got to have your hat on, either a farmer hedger or else a trader. There's incredible opportunity to both sides.
Chuck?
We wouldn't do anything right now. I think South America has offered us another opportunity every year. There's kind of a weather scare that goes on down there, a rest scare. So I think on a new crop beans, we'd wait there. On the corn, again, we just feel that we're going to have a higher price come spring on that new crop corn to take an opportunity to make some sales. Probably Kurt's number there, 260, is a place to start. I mean, realistically, 270, 275 is always hard to get above on new crop corn. We saw that this year, unless you have a major weather event that continues. On the bean side, probably again, we get in 625 to 650 on new crop beans would be a good goal to start and get a little bit going where you can, make some money at those levels. One of my most successful clients is a farmer from Wisconsin who never has been able to sell ahead because of basis, and he every year they buy puts on their production of corn and beans both, and he can ride through a lot, and it's been the most successful farmer seller I've had because he'll do all his bushels that way. He follows the same plan every year, and that's worked very well.
Wow. Well, I'm ready to hear the put plan. What is it?
He'll just buy puts, and if the market goes up like it did this year, he started out with 230 puts. He rolled them up and bought 260 puts. Now he's in the process of getting rid of those and moving down. So it goes back to each person. I mean, buy a put option that you feel comfortable with, you can afford in your budget, but at least you know you're putting a minimum floor underneath you. And as Kurt was saying, we certainly have a lot of movement in this market. It's going to give you opportunities. It doesn't stay there like it used to, and it's hard to pull the trigger, especially if you're in an area this year with the weather in Illinois. It just made it extremely difficult to do anything.
Sue?
Well, first off, next year's Dease corn is around 249 and three quarters. So you're not very far from this year's highs. Yeah, we got to 272, 273. So if you take out on this next year's Dease corn over 273, you're now making higher highs year-to-year continuation for December corn. So that's kind of telling you a little something that the market's on a mission. Secondly, I would not be forward selling any new crop beans at all. I just would not do it. It kind of reminds me of like October feeder cattle. Last year's contract of October feeder cattle expired off the board at 113.90. And its contract high, all-time high for that month of or option month, was 115.30. This year's October feeder contract was quite a bit discounted in price. What has that market done? It's progressively worked higher. Well, take a look at those May soybeans year in, year out, and the July beans year in, year out. They are extremely discounted from a year ago's price. That will not stay that way. And as long as that gap remains, there's going to be a draw because beans are too cheap. Furthermore, if you look at what beans were this month, so far for this month, we've had beans in the world market priced at $5.16 a bushel. That's pretty reasonable. And now today that wouldn't have changed a whole lot. While beans were down, the dollar was up nicely. But beans have got some pretty good merit or value in the world market. So you're going to be seeing some demand coming at us. And one more thing on corn. While the USDA looked at the amount of ears, and they said there were more ear counts this year than, or well, ear counts were down from last year, but up from the year of 2003. But if you look at kernels on those ears, there were less kernels sizably from a year ago on those ears, but also less kernels than you had in 2003. And I think it was like about 10 kernels per ear less than the five-year average. So that tells me that all in all, just because they're looking at more ears than 2003 doesn't mean they're going to come up with more production than they had in 2003.
Just a reminder, because in a little bit we're going to be done, those white cards, if you would put your name and email address, we'll get you that e-letter. And if you rip the card in half, you'll see there's a piece that has our little clock egg programming on it. You keep that part, and you give me the part with the name and the email address. And if you just pass them to the center aisle, I'll just go up and down the aisle and collect them as the evening progresses. We haven't touched on livestock at all, and some interesting things going on with livestock, particularly as it relates to the hog industry. And there are suspicions that there will be indeed more hogs produced come fall, winter, into the spring. And Sue, it might mean something to do with crush and meal and some sort of a play there. Could you give us your analysis of the hog industry?
Well, first off, the one thing that the hog market is enjoying is a lot of good export demand. It's also got good domestic usage as well. In fact, demand is almost outstripping the amount of numbers we've got going on right now, and we have a good supply. Plus, we're also looking at an expansion. Another thing I think that's helping hold the hog market together is, well, there's a couple of things. One is that this Hurricane Katrina hitting through three states throughout the South, what do those people eat a lot of? Pork and chicken and then, of course, fish. And they have lost a ton of birds down there. They've lost a lot of chicks. And if they don't get the energy up and going, they're going to lose millions of birds besides. And so that is taking production away, and so they're going to infuse something else into it, and it's going to be pork. And if you look at all the refrigerators that probably lost meat, freezers that lost meat in homes, and then the grocery stores that are not running, even though in Louisiana, in New Orleans, there's probably, you know, a lot of conventions lost where they would have had good demand, I think there's by far been more meat lost that will at some point when they get up and going will be replaced, and these people are being displaced to other areas where they're going to feed them. So I think that's helping underneath this market putting in demand. The other thing I think that's going on is the cattle market. Right now, wheat pastures are in fairly good condition. You've got a good demand for lightweight feeders. And so consequently, that keeps that market propped up. You've got cheap corn. Anyone that's cutting high moisture corn can turn around, draw a high LDP. They've got nice price for their cattle, and they can turn around and life's good and they're getting a lot for their corn, walking it off the farm. So that's helping hold up the feeder market. We also are not getting into the U.S. as many feeders in the month of September so far as what we had anticipated out of Canada. That's creating a demand under this cattle market, and that in turn is helping keeping the hog market propped up too, because we keep going for cheaper things. With this high energy, these housewives, just in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I have really heard the complaints. And it's because everybody's, you know, and they've got taxes to pay. They go to the grocery store, and because of the tight supply of milk cows, not to mention now that milk down in the South is just being thrown on the ground or poured out because they don't have the energy to cool it or send it anywhere, you've got milk costs a fair amount in the grocery store. It doesn't matter what they're buying. It all costs more than it did. And the housewife is feeling squeezed, or families are feeling squeezed, especially if they have kids, and then they had to put them into school, and it costs more to enter them in school. So this at some point is going to come back, and it's going to haunt the cattle market. And that's the market that I think is real concerning. But as we were pushing this hog market higher, I would be using it to hedge.
Chuck?
Great profits tend to lead to increased production, and we see some of that going on. Our main strategy in hogs is they got really cheap feed costs, so we're buying put options as far out as guys can go. The summer month June hogs at $64. The hog guys are making some extremely good profit as well as cattle guys, so we continue to buy puts as far out as anybody would like to do it that we work with.
You could also sell some call options up there too. The only way that's be wrong, if that goes on up there, that puts you a short at a higher price. But I agree, we're seeing some expansion in the hog industry. We'll see what the cold storage report says here as far as the South goes, but cheap grains, got these feeders sky high, and you know, I see these 90-cent fats as a good opportunity.
Do we have any questions in the audience? Oh, we do. You win that doggone vehicle out there. We're a farm bureau. Congratulations.
What's likely to happen to the corn and soybean markets if for some reason the port of New Orleans doesn't get opened quickly or the barge problem continues?
Impact of Katrina on the markets regarding how quickly we might see exports up and running something near a normal level, and boy, it has been amazing few days. It seems like just yesterday when Katrina hit, it's been about 10, 12 days, something like that. Already, we're seeing some amazing things and amazing returns down there. If we're looking at the reports, Kurt, what are you hearing from down there?
Well, basically, it's more of a navigational process right now, but the way I understand it, half of them are up and running. There's probably one that could be questionable for some time. But naturally, they broke the basis, and I think the commercial took advantage of that for a short period of time. If you look at Gulf bids, they're on the rebound here on corn especially. Now, beans have been kind of sloppy here for a minute or two. It's a main artery. 60-70% of the grain goes out. So another disturbance down there, another hurricane could be disaster for, say, but most of those ports are on north. They've regained their power. They can get to them. There's one or two real closer to New Orleans. They could experience some problems here for a little bit just due to security getting in and out. They operate 24/7 in the areas where they had curfew from dawn to dusk. Hopefully they could avoid that over time. But also, too, we've got other outlets, too. If you watch the Pacific Northwest, bases just skyrocketed there. There's more cost in transportation. So some of these other ports will pick up the slack, but not enough slack to move grain the other way, the main channels that way. So barring no more storms, I think we'll be okay. It's just the backlog for a while.
How long is that backlog going to last, Chuck?
I read a story today. There's 90 to 400 barges that are either sunk, grounded, or God only knows where they are, how far inland they are. So I think it's going to take a while to fix it. And the other thing, too, it's not only down there, but the river levels are extremely low. I mean, we have been dry, and the barges can't load as heavy, even if they got them. So that's going to backlog things. So I think it is kind of a serious issue. I mean, especially if you're of the mindset that exporting this corn into a world market that is extremely tight, it's a concern. I think you're seeing that in the basis, though, and that may continue for a while. We've got to get rid of this corn somewhere.
Any questions for our panelists? Looking for a question.
I had a question about the major natural gas producing countries forming their own OPEC, their own version of it. I read that in Business Week about a month ago.
Everybody's shaking their head no.
Corn growers need to form their own corn growing OPEC.
I think there's a lot of amens in the room to that one. Questions for our panelists? Wait a minute, let me do the Phil Donahue thing, get over to you so everybody can hear you.
Hey, we're talking about LDPs possibly on beans if the basis wasn't
Do we like the idea that we might see an LDP on soybeans? Sue?
Well, you'd have to drop this market pretty good to do that. And I think that this river thing is mostly just a basis thing. The Pacific Northwest is pretty bottlenecked from what I hear already. And to go to Houston, you could load ships out of Houston as well, but it's not as easy to get the cars there, even though the Union Pacific and the Southern... I can't remember the other one that goes there, but you could have the price of beans going higher if this let's just say all things happen and that the Port of New Orleans doesn't run up to full capacity with where the river levels are, and so far that doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon, and so they're loading barges half of what they normally would be, which means that's twice the trips that you got to make. And so world end buyers being short-bought, no, they're not going to get things as fast as they had originally thought they would, even if it was half of what they were going to get, you know, in time. To me, I would be covering myself on the board. And China, by the way, has been an avid buyer of late for beans. So that shows they're showing concern, and they're coming into the board, and they're buying. Well, once they buy on the board, or they buy through a commercial and the commercial covers themselves, they're going to force a delivery. And I would think end users would be, or world buyers would be doing that if they are needing to have stuff in their hands. And of course, I think China wants to keep their crush going quite nicely. And then, so the price of the market could go up on the board, and yet the basis just widen out on you. And maybe you don't see an LDP.
All the way in the back. I can get back there just a second. Yes, sir.
What's your thoughts on inflation, interest rates, and the price of farmland?
Outside factors, inflation, interest rates, and farmland values. Sue's waving, but I'm going to get to Chuck first. You want to get to Sue?
I'll defer to her. Go ahead.
Deferring.
Yes. I will answer, but she really wants to.
Go ahead.
Well, with what's happened down in the South, I would have to think with all the rebuilding that's going to go on and with all the drive to get people to come back and live in that area and start life over again, I think the government is going to be not raising their interest rates and that they're going to be offering some pretty good deals on interest rates for rebuilding. And the government had, it used to be we had 12 district reserves around the country. And years ago, it used to be that they would operate independently, and that would allow for, if something went on in a certain part of the country, it would not have the ripple effect or the effect on other parts of the country, just that area could take care of it. But when they put all of them together as one, now the whole country feels the effect of when something major happens. So I think interest rates are going to not increase, and I think they'll level out and maybe at worst stay where they are, and they might even fall back a little bit because of what's been happening. Some are trying to say we're going in for a deflationary feel to things, and one would wonder when you see lumber on this market limit up for about 5 or 6 days and could not seem to take out the highs that you've had so far yet this year and then turn around and fall back. But in Hurricane Andrew, when that struck, and I think that was in 92 or so, when that hit, lumber prices actually fell hard first and then all of a sudden came out and just were on a tear. I think what's happening down south is horribly inflationary.
Okay, Chuck, go ahead.
The debt's always paid for. I think they're talking about spending $1 billion a day or a week or whatever. It's an unbelievable amount of money we're going to put out. We already had a big problem with the debt, so I think inflation is about the only way the government can solve that problem. On the farmland side, if interest rates stay relatively low, that's another tool for those outside investors to continue to put their money in farmland. It's kind of separated, I think, in Indiana, anyway, the cash rent was tied to land values, but it's gotten so far out of whack that I think there's a separation there. But land values, I think, are firm, and a lot of investor money continues to, in Indiana at least, pour into farmland. It's kind of cooled off. It's not surging up as much as it was, but there's still plenty of buyers if farms come up that are good farms.
Well, I think the average person looks at interest rates or your CD or your mortgage as an indicator of inflation. I think there's misconception there. I think inflation's been on the rise. I don't know about you guys, but you look at housing, cost of a house, look at gasoline, look at the cost of auto, look at your health insurance. I mean, just everything's just moving right along. Anybody says there's no inflation, they're crazy. A politician would tell you there's no inflation because they're in charge. What do they do to stay in office? Create jobs and low inflation. What's all the numbers based off? Non-inflationary items. Now, I wish they'd come pay my bills. They'd have a little different opinion. As far as farmland values, like Chuck said, it just depends on the outside money. These rollovers are just phenomenal, but you know, in these dry areas here, I'm afraid farm ground's probably going to back off for a minute or two.
Yes, sir.
And looking at these numbers, if they're fairly correct on the USDA, come March, we're going to be in a very similar boat than March that we had March 2005. The funds bailed us out for a while. I mean, they put the dollar on the soybeans, got the corn thing moving, and then the drought came in, moved that up. What happens if those two avenues don't take effect in 06?
Funds helped bail us out in 05 to get us to 270 corn. What about 06?
Well, they like buying undervalue and selling overvalue. And if corn's cheap, I think they have reasons again to come in. So I would expect them to still play the game and be in there.
Will we know this year?
Never. That's the problem with funds. You don't know what they're going to do.
We didn't know until it happened.
I still think the key comes back to corn is that in Indiana, I'll go back there again. My pocketbook says that if I'm going to plant something or going to expand my acres or change my acres, it's going to be terribly expensive to plant corn. And if that price is in that 250, 240 range futures, I'm not real thrilled about that. And I don't think Kurt mentioned it too. I think bankers, we always have to deal with them eventually, are not real thrilled about the prospects of pushing out big money for corn. I'm not saying we're not going to plant corn acres. I'm just saying I think we can see a pretty significant reduction of corn acres if we don't get a price rally in corn.
Well, if you have a reduction, won't you get the rise?
Yeah, but it's which comes chicken or the egg. Which is going to come first? They're going to run the price up to make sure we're going to do it, or are they going to wait for a report that shows, well, farmers are hesitating? And it's not only here in the Midwest. The cotton acres probably grow in the South. Wheat was mentioned, too. Again, it's simply a cash flow issue. And if you're in a poor crop area, as I said, you can go buy, get free money from a seed company. You don't have to put any money out for bean seed. Roundup's cheap. You don't really have to fertilize beans if you got leftover fertilizer. I mean, do the math. And again, I love what Sue's saying. I'm all in favor of that. Plant beans and hope she's right.
Yeah, part of it got to remember too that we've already got a premium 206 corn. I mean, we're up against 250 already, so there's already that anxiety there. The guys in our option pit say that they've funds have already been buying tons of $3 corn calls already to position themselves. Some of these end users have been going to this 2006 already positioned themselves, so it's already got a premium. That's why DSO6 is where it's at. I think it's probably going to come down to the March planting intentions report. But you got to remember, if you put, say, 150 bushels to the acre or 140 bushels to the acre, 1 million acres is 140, 150 million bushels. So it's going to take 5 to 6 million acre shift to be real bullish, for say. Then after that, it's just going to hinge on weather. If we don't gain more moisture here throughout the central belt from rest of the winter into spring, you can see something quite explosive, I think. I think this is sort of familiar to 87. 87, we came in the fall. We had the same type of market. We ran up. We came back down. We made new lows going into the fall. After that, we started ratcheting our way back up. If you measure the winter low to the summer high, we had this almost the same percentage rally. If you measure the summer high to the fall low, we've almost had the same percentage drop. So there's some correlation there, technically and fundamentally both. So it's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be emotional, and it's going to be fast.
All right. We just about reached the end of our time. Todd Gleason has just walked in the room. Todd Gleason is the host of the Closing Market Report.